All right, 3, 2, 1. All right, what's going on, guys? This is a new podcast called The Matt Ryan Show. Obviously, we are not Matt Ryan. And you may be thinking Atlanta Falcons Matt Ryan, or better known to me as LA Lakers Matt Ryan, that everybody knows. This is Matthew Hargrove. I'm Ryan Gooden. This is the new basketball podcast that we're going to try out. I say basketball, it'll probably end up being all sports by the end of it, just because we're kind of nerds like that. But Matthew, go ahead, start off, introduce yourself. What do you do now? What do you, obviously we grew up together. I say we grew up together. We met in college. It feels like we grew up together. We both have the same degree, which is not a real degree, but it's sports broadcasting. Obviously, we met doing radio, so we kind of have a little bit of background in this. But now you're calling baseball games for minor league teams.
Yeah, this is the first time really getting into the podcast game, and it feels it's a lot of fun, but it feels weird because, like Ryan just said, we got the opportunity to do this in college, but. Yeah, I'm calling baseball games, trying to do the play-by-play route. So, but love talking hoops. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, usually 90% of our conversations are pretty much a podcast when we're talking basketball. So, it'll be a lot of fun, and it's a perfect time for it. NBA Finals just ended, and then we got the draft this week.
That's a perfect segue because I kind of wanted to recap what happened last year. Obviously, Boston Celtics beat the Dallas Mavericks 4-1 in the NBA Finals. Wasn't close at all, really, particularly. The way that this season went, it was interesting. Obviously, I think we've had 6 new champions the last 6 years, which you haven't seen that parity in the league forever. It kind of makes you wonder on to next year, but let's just reflect on this past year. Nobody knows anything about us, so it's going to be a hot start. You're a Denver Nuggets fan, have been your whole life. Tell them why. It's kind of gross.
Yeah, it's, I consider him, you know, top 3 player in the game. Probably have Jordan, LeBron, I guess, is there, and then Carmelo Anthony. So those 3 I consider the best in the game. You know, what's really funny is it's not how I started liking Melo was – it was not because of like watching a game or anything like that. It was because I had NBA Live 04. I don't know if I ever told you that story, but he was on the cover for NBA Live 04. And that was when like one of my first basketball games that I had. And just obviously he was on the cover. So I thought, well, I guess this guy must be pretty good. And I started playing with him. So obviously
and now he's top 3. So
and now he's top 3 ever to play a game of basketball. So that's kind of how I became a Nuggets fan, but you know, obviously they had a really good year. It's hard to go back to back, but I love what you mentioned about how there's so many different teams because you go back, especially the 21st century, and you can even go back to the 90s. It seems like there has always been a dynasty. You know, the 90s, obviously you had the Bulls, 2000s, you know, you had the Lakers that won 3. I consider the San Antonio Spurs, even though it was well drawn.
That's where
out,
I was going.
But,
yeah.
But I consider that a dynasty. And I believe their first one was 99. So, you know, it kind of it stretches out to the last one they won in 2014. 2014, yeah. I believe, was that last year. So, and then obviously you move forward 2010s. You have the Golden State Warriors and pretty much LeBron James are the dynasties.
I was wondering if you were going to throw Miami Heat as a dynasty in there. I didn't
well,
know, four
no,
years,
no,
two
no,
rings.
You got them in 3. I think everybody, you got to at least win 3. But, you know, yeah, this year you have the Lakers, Bucks, 22 Warriors, which I guess that is part of the dynasty as well, and the Nuggets and Celtics. But, you know, NBA is obviously in a really good spot if you like that because even next year, as good, the Celtics are going to be right there again. But it's not a given that they're going to be just the absolute favorites.
Well, and the growth you saw from some teams, I mean, Oklahoma City, they're on the cusp right now of feeling like and I don't want to say it because it's hard to replicate what they did, but they feel like Golden State in the fact that they're homegrown, but they've added now a piece in the last 2 days. They just traded Josh Giddey for Alex Caruso, and then almost feels like a pickup that Golden State made when they got Andre Iguodala. Obviously, it's kind of been talked about by Woj and some more sources. Zach Lowe have kind of touched on the fact that it's one of those veteran signings that is strictly defense, but Alex Caruso can shoot at least a little bit compared to Iguodala. But it just feels like one of those teams, those young teams that are just trying to get a veteran leader who knows how to win. I mean, you play with LeBron when they were at their peak. So it just feels like they're headed in that direction to go full-blown. We have 3 to 4 years to really maximize this team. Because if you don't get one, then you start getting that Celtics territory last year where it was like, should Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown even be playing on the same team? There was talks about splitting those two up. If you don't win in the next 3 to 4 years, that same talk between Jalen Williams and Shea could be happening. So I think the window for the Thunder is kind of these next 4 years.
I always thought that argument with the Celtics was so ridiculous because Jason Tatum is only 26 years old and Jaylen Brown is in 27. I have always considered that your prime is 28 to 32. You know, if last year they got beat by the Miami Heat and they were in their 30s, like 30, 31, then absolutely you should have the argument. But I always thought that argument was blown out. And OKC, they have a really impressive team. I actually am not a huge fan of the Iguodala argument because I did see where you got the comparison because Woj tweeted something out about it being similar to that. Andre Iguodala, and I don't have like his stats in front of me. Yeah. Wasn't he an all-star? I mean, he was an all-star before with the 76ers, maybe.
Well, the Sixers for sure. Now, when he played his last year in Denver before he got to Golden State, he played 1 year in Denver, and he was a better player back then than Alex Caruso is now, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and no disrespect, Alex Caruso's awesome. He's a great player. He's a champion. He helped the Lakers. He was crucial off the bench for them. But I mean, Andre Iguodala on that Nuggets team in 2012-2013, Denver was the 3 seed, and Andre Iguodala was arguably the best player on that team. You know, they had Ty Lawson and Kenneth Faried, and they were still really good. And then that's when the Warriors came in, and everybody started to know because they beat them in the first round. But and also, too, before that summer, Iguodala was playing for Team USA on the Olympics. Yeah. So I think that one is a little blown out of proportion.
I think this is where they're going with it, is more of the Golden State Warriors, if you remember – before the 2015 championship, I remember it vividly. The 2014 playoff run, they played the Clippers and they went to 7 games, and that was a hard fought 7 games. And obviously, Mark Jackson was still the coach. So then next year, you had a coaching change, which for a playoff team that goes 7 games, who's on the up, was very weird. And then you bring in a former All-Star. Now, I'm almost positive Alex Caruso has never been an all-star. But I think the narrative is like for Oklahoma City, you lost in the second round to the eventual team who went on to play in the finals. And then now you're bringing in a veteran who can help you win now. And I think it's more of the fact that they're in win now mode, which they should be. I mean, they are a young team. They have a MVP candidate on their team, and now they have playoff experience, which is what they got this year, which was huge. Obviously, it doesn't have to be next year. People think that once you reach the playoffs, they're going to get the same thing with Anthony Edwards. Once you are 24 years old, 25 years old, and you reach the playoffs, it's win or bust. And it's like, I get that's the mentality, but also, I mean, LeBron won his first championship at 28. 20,
yeah. I think he was 26, 27 when he got to Miami again.
Steph Curry is 36 now, I believe. He won it in 2015, so that would make him 27.
Yeah.
So you're talking like this is that's the time. That's when people are entering their prime, as you said earlier, that's when they start winning championships. You don't see 24-year-olds that are stars go and win a championship. I mean, it took Nikola Jokic till he's, what, 28 now?
28, so, yeah.
Like, I think people rush it, but there's a time to, and there's like that's why I say they've got a 4-year window, because in 4 years, if they win it, then you extend everybody and you try to go back. But it's definitely a right move, especially with the whole Giddy situation, especially on the court. We won't get to the stuff off the court because we don't know. But on the court, he didn't look like the same player after everything happened. So it's a nice change of scenery for him. And also for OKC, you got a great role player that can help you win right now.
And also, Jalen Williams has turned out to be a pretty nice player for him.
He's a stud.
Yeah. So you have, and Jalen Williams, obviously, he's still young. So you have potentially three go-to scorers. And there's really no need for Josh Giddey as good as he is. And that's why you assume that the trade happened. And it might be better for Giddey too, because, you know, he's going to get a lot more reps in Chicago and be a part of a rebuilding team. You know, everything it sounds like, and it sounds like Chicago is going to blow up everything, which you never know. You might see on Wednesday.
I feel like it's needed. I mean, they've had this same core of mediocre 8-seed, 7-seed, missed the play-in type seasons to where you've got to get out of the mud. Either be the bottom team in the league or be a playoff team. There's no in-between for them. And with guys like DeRozan and LaVine and just similar players with similar play styles that are not 1As, not really 1Bs either, maybe a 2 or a 3 at best if you're looking for a championship team. It's just not a good recipe. I say you start over, but we're not here to talk about the Bulls because we have plenty to talk about now. When I will say episode 2 will be free agents. We're going to talk about free agency. It's coming up, I believe, in 6 days from now. This will be released on Tuesday. Draft is on Wednesday, so we are going to get into the draft. But one thing I wanted to say about free agency, we will probably do an episode, record it, hopefully sometime either this week or early next week, and either get the reactions or maybe some predictions. I will throw out one just in case we don't get ahead of it, and that is OKC's got to go get a big man. They've got to go pay for – you can either go overpay for Isaiah Hartenstein if that's the type that you want. You can go get Nick Claxton. You can – honestly, if you want to – you know, if you don't want to pay that much or go that high, I don't even mind trading for a Jonas Valanciunas type. Like, you just got to get somebody that is an actual center who can man up and play – against somebody like Jokic, because if Chet is your 5 out rebounding and whoever's going to be playing in the post is going to dominate him. You saw it. You didn't get to see it much with Dallas, but when Minnesota or Denver, with any of those teams can come in, and the West is going to be stacked next year again, they just don't have the size or rebounding if Jalen Williams is playing your 4 and Chet's playing your 5. So that's one that I expect. Somebody's going to get paid by OKC if you're a big man. So that's just the one.
Real quick, last comment. I think too, Chet's going to get bigger.
For sure.
I mean, he's still only 21. But like you said, OKC obviously with the Caruso trade, they understand that they think they're in a win now mode, so right. They're not going to wait around. Like it's unfair to Chet because he is only 21. And probably not going to give the opportunity to really grow into that role. But that's what happens. You know, Shea is 26. He'll be 27 going into the playoffs next year, I believe. So he's definitely starting to get into that tier. Yeah. I agree. There's, you know, the Hartenstein thing is interesting because he's a perfect backup center. And he was phenomenal with the Knicks. You know, Denver actually had him for a season as the backup center, and he great minutes off the bench and just plays hard.
Well, that's what you need, but also you could even play him. You could start him. I wouldn't mind if you started him, and then you play Chet at the four. You play Jalen Williams at the three, who's 6'6", so that's his natural, you know, position. And then you can play Shea and whatever guard you want. That's not Giddy. You can play Caruso. You can play Aaron Wiggins. They have so much wing depth that that doesn't matter. It's the big man. You can't be playing Chet and Jalen Williams at the four and five. I get that it's small ball and spaces out and everybody can shoot, but defensively and rebounding, you're just a liability. And
well, playoffs, I don't know anymore, because obviously the 3-point shot, like, that's just, it is what it is. It's part of the game. But it seemed like every time, you know, there would be a team lose, everybody would be talking about, well, this is, they were undersized. They need guys in the paint. And it seems like it always came down to that.
Well, if you never noticed, the small ball teams that win have a guy like, you know, and it's easy to point at Draymond, but he was a 6'6" guy who played like he was 7 feet. Just because he would grab every rebound, he would defend at a high level. He got away with a lot of stuff. I'm not discounting that, but he played like a big man. And some of these guys just want to stay out in the corner and shoot, and they don't really want to do the dirty work. And that's what it takes. And that's what Alex Caruso is also there for, to do the dirty work that championships teams need. But we'll stop talking about OKC because there's a draft in 2 days, and it's actually pretty interesting. I know I've always been big into NBA prospects, MLB prospects, NFL prospects. I scout for NFL for a company right now. So, like, that's what I know and love. So I know way too much about this class because it's not a great class, and I shouldn't know half the names, but I do. I'm not sure how much you do, but here's the breakdown, sort of. Alex Sarr is a French big man, 7'1", probably 215, but he reminds you of a, I'm not going to say Wimby because there's nobody even close to him, but he is a athletic big who has the potential to be able to shoot. He's a good finisher around the rim, but he can block shots. He can play defense. He is a prototypical new age big man. And, he'd be the consensus number one pick if it weren't for the fact that the Atlanta Hawks have the pick. And I'm not sure if you remember this, when Luka Doncic was drafted, by the Atlanta Hawks originally, and then traded to the Dallas Mavericks for Trae Young, the reason that was is because Luka Doncic's agent didn't want – I don't know if there's a vendetta against the Hawks with the agent, but it's the same agent that's now representing Alex Sarr. And there's reports coming out that Alexander Sarr hasn't even worked out for the Hawks. He won't even, like, express any interest of playing with the Hawks. It almost feels like he's not going to be an Atlanta Hawk, which is so cruel to his future because –
Well, is it like an Eli Manning kind of thing?
But I don't get it because the Atlanta Hawks got blessed into this pick. I mean, they were supposed to pick 8 or maybe 7 or 8, and they got jumped all the way to the number one spot. You have Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, two guards that can get you the ball if you're a big man, because he can dribble the ball, but it's not like he can bring the ball up. So you've got arguably one of the best passing point guards in the league to get you whatever shot that you want, and you're asking to go to the Wizards.
Well, I'm not sure how much he is actually been studying these rosters or anything like that, but there has been so much, and I feel like this has been going on for 2 years, there has been so much buzz about Trae Young going to Lakers. And, you know, a lot of that trade stuff is just rumors. But, you know, Lakers, we talk about win now with the Thunder. It's always win now for OKC. They just hired J.J. Redick, and I promise you J.J. Redick didn't take the job thinking that they were going to finish 7 or 8 again. So there's got to be a game plan with L.A. You know, Trae Young, great shooter. You know, he wants to play winning basketball, so maybe he has that in the mind, that maybe Atlanta is starting a rebuild, and which is ridiculous to think that you know, if you're a rookie, it's ridiculous to come in and think that just immediately you should be on a winning team.
Here's my issue, though, is that if that is the plan, if rebuilding and trading one of the stars is your plan for the Atlanta Hawks, it better not be Trae Young. If you're choosing between DeJounte Murray and Trae Young, you better not choose DeJounte Murray. That is the most criminal act. I like DeJounte as a player. He is not Trae Young. Don't get it twisted. Trae Young took this team to the Eastern Conference Finals by himself just 2 or 3 years ago. Like, it hasn't been. Yeah. I know people forget, and everybody likes
people
to,
do.
To
think. People do forget.
Recency bias, but he carried the Atlanta Hawks to an Eastern Conference Finals appearance, which, by the way, Joel Embiid hasn't gotten to.
Yeah. Thank you for
everybody loves
everyone.
Everybody loves Joel, but Trae Young has gotten farther than him in less time, and he's dragging a team that is awful. Now, I'm not saying Alexander Sarr is a guaranteed, you know, superstar, but in this draft, there's not a can't miss prospect in it. But he's the closest one to it. So I think it would just be criminal if Alexander Sarr's agent is the reason that the Hawks aren't able to pick him or don't feel comfortable picking him because they don't know if he'll actually play for him.
It's a shame because it would be cool to see him get drafted if, you know, he turns out to be a true number one because –
Well, at the very least, he's a defensive problem. And as a big man, if he's a cheaper Clint Capella, so be it. Like, I don't get the fact that we're not going to – I can't wrap my head around agents. I don't get it. I just saw something today about Rich Paul and that then Clutch. And I think I'm about done with Clutch because any Clutch player – well, one, you're from Tennessee, but I live in Kentucky, have my whole life. For some reason, Rich Paul hates Kentucky, and I guess it was because of Cal. Something recently just came out today about Chris Livingston, who, if you remember, he was a top, I don't know, he was the number one eighth grader, and then he became like a top 10 prospect, and then he became like a top 20 prospect in high school. And it was one of those guys that peaked early, grew faster than everybody else, was able to dunk in eighth grade back when that wasn't a thing. Now everybody's doing it. And, he just never got better. He was always the best when he was young and then never got better. And he went from number one player in eighth grade, top 10 prospect, to then getting drafted at the very end of the second round or basically undrafted to the Milwaukee Bucks. And Rich Paul's blaming Cal as if Cal didn't sit there and start that man. I watched every game of Chris Livingston. He does not.
Oh, I believe it. NBA player. I believe it.
But it's these agents that they just wrap their head around, oh, well, he was a top prospect. He's going to be in the NBA, a top 10 pick, no matter what, because of these rankings. And it's like, just because you don't watch the games doesn't mean that any scout or anybody that actually does their job understands that he's not a good NBA player. But,
well, you know, agents are, you know, they're for themselves too, because obviously they get a split and, you know, they're going to be tough to deal with. Yeah, I know that's strictly basketball, but with baseball, you know, Scott Boras, he got under a lot of people's skin this year and waited. And, you know, Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, some of the top pitchers, they weren't signed until after the regular season or spring training, somewhere around the start of the season. And it's just really tough. It's tough for those guys.
Green.
Well, I mean, that's what it is. They get a percentage, and they know that if they can find a way to get their guy more money, it benefits them as well. So they don't care about rankings or anything like that.
Well, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, so we'll go past it because we're not going to spend any time on Bronny James. Contrary to popular belief, he's not a big part in this draft for me.
What Simmons said about Bronny James.
Bill Simmons?
Bill Simmons.
No.
So,
Bill the Simmons hostage situation?
The hostage.
Yes, I did. I forgot about that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
It makes sense. It really does. It won't happen.
No, but
it makes sense.
It's better for a market like that to do it than somebody like the Orlando, or not, I shouldn't say Orlando Magic, because they're, but like, I don't know. The Washington Wizards, if they draft Bronny James, you think LeBron's coming to Washington to play basketball? Yeah.
Well, now, I think it's not. I don't know if it's about that. I think it's about.
Well, I understand gatekeeping them.
Get them. It's like, well, how bad
do you want them?
How bad do you want them? How badly are you going to bow down to LeBron James?
But here's the thing, guys. I think Rob Pelinka is done listening to LeBron. I think after the Russell Westbrook thing, he kind of basically said, LeBron, you're the basketball player. You're not the GM. Let me do my job. And I don't think if the Lakers don't draft him, I don't think they're going to get him. I don't think they'll play together. Really, though? I don't think so.
I mean, J.J. Redick's the coach.
Yeah, but Rob Pelinka's job is on the line. And if it's always on the line because it's the Lakers. Every person's job is on the line if you're the Los Angeles Lakers. But if you're Rob Pelinka, are you throwing your job on the line for Bronny fucking James? Are you giving up Max Christie or even a decent? Because you don't have there's no young player in their team that, you know, is like, oh, well, in a year he'll be fantastic. It's not like they're oozing with talent.
So you don't think they take him?
I think if they give a chance to, I don't think they take him at 17.
Second round, they'll take him.
If he's there in the second round, they'll take him for sure. But I'm saying if one of these teams takes him in early second, just to piss off the Lakers, it's hilarious to me. I don't think they give up assets to go get him. And he could be good. Let's be clear. I just said we weren't going to spend time on him, and there we are spending time on him. I don't think he's going to be a horrible player. He could be pretty good. He could be out of the league in 2 years. It just depends. I think LeBron bred his perfect fit for him, which is a point guard who is a defender and a three-point shooter. He's basically Mario Chalmers for the Heat, but just he's trying to act like
if Bronny James turns out to be Mario Chalmers.
Well, I mean, he's
the Lakers. Then the Lakers won the draft.
Well,
if they get him late second round, he turns out
Mario Chalmers. Late Mario Chalmers. Well, I just mean like a guy that plays defense, shoots threes, and occasionally can. I'm sure he's got great passing ability. We didn't get to see much of it at USC, but I don't know. I just feel like he was bred for a perfect LeBron James point guard, which is, you know. It's fine if that's what LeBron wants, but
yeah,
I just don't think they give up assets to get him, and I wouldn't either if I'm him. But
no,
anyway, right, we'll move off the Hawks.
I keep switching the subject. Let's get into the draft.
You're all good. We second pick. We won't go through all of them. We'll probably stick in the lottery because that's maybe top 10 for a lot of these guys.
Second pick. Who do you like best in the top 10, you know, I guess other than Alex Sarr or the two French guys at the top?
I mean, Reece Hoshea is a good player. I know he's the guy you just mentioned. We'll get into him in a second, but I don't know if it's the bias in me or if it is just the fact that I got to see every game. Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham, I know there's limitations to each player, respectively. Reed Sheppard, 6'3", if you put him in some tall, high-heel shoes, that's what they listed him at, but I don't think he's 6'3".
Well, is he, you know, and I'm making this comparison because it's Kentucky, you know, Tyler Hero. How does he compare to Tyler Hero?
I don't think he does. I mean, Hero's 6'6". He's long. He never defended at Kentucky, but he has the ability to be. Reed is a scrappy. He reminds me, I'm trying to not throw out comparisons that are like just loose comparisons, because I have one that I love here in a second that I'll throw out. But Reed Sheppard, he's a dog on defense. He is a good passer. The limitation with him that nobody's talking about is he can't. He's a shooting. He's a 6'3" shooting guard. He can't run the point, I don't think, for a team. It's the ball handling for me that's the issue. Obviously, he can clean that up and be serviceable. He's never going to be the flashy guy, but if he can handle the ball in the NBA, I think he'll be a perfect role player for no matter what. If the Houston Rockets get him and you have Fred VanVleet to learn behind for a year before his contract's up, and then you get to just take over, I think that is perfect for him. If New Orleans Pelicans decide they want to trade up because the Houston Rockets want Brandon Ingram, be my guest. The Pelicans, you have Zion, who's a ball handler, and Reed Shepard. You have a shooter now to space out the floor and get rid of CJ McCollum. Like, there's multiple teams that I can see Reed Shepard flowing into. But he's got a great three-point shot. He'll shoot well over 40%. And he's just a smart player. I don't want to use too many terms that just talk about a white guy, but he's a good shooter who's smart, and he plays defense when he needs to. I mean, he's the perfect white guy. I don't know. But the comparison I want to throw out was Rob Dillingham, and he reminds me so much of a point guard version of Jamal Crawford. And it's uncanny to me. I don't think I haven't seen it yet. I don't look at the comparisons, to be honest, because
yeah, that's a lot.
It is. But I don't know that he's going to be a starting point guard in this league, but if he is your backup point guard who comes in and just gives you buckets, no. And here's the thing, though, he's a better passer than Jamal, so he is that point guard type. He's a buck 75 maybe at 6'1". For a point guard, he's going to get dominated. Like, he can't play any defense, and he'll just be a liability on that side of the floor. But I think his offense is good enough to be a Jamal Crawford type. He's shifty like him. His moves remind me so much of Jamal, where it's everything is just on a string, but it's also high, and he's like just jumpy. I don't know. He reminds me of Jamal Crawford, just a point guard version of him. But those two guys for me, I mean, I don't know how deep this draft is. It's kind of top heavy. There's a few sleepers in the middle of the round, but I don't know. It's not the strong draft class for sure.
Obviously you don't know until these guys get, and you know, I think a lot of it is, I don't think it's labeled as a strong draft class, is because usually the top two guys we know a lot about. And I would say most of the nation that even watches basketball, they're not familiar with these two guys. And Alex Saar has not been hyped up. You know, Victor Wembanyama, there was always tape on him, highlights it across your timeline. It was always there. And I think, too, that makes it, which I actually love this pick just looking at it, but Donovan Clingan at number 4, and it's probably why it's not a quote-unquote great draft, is because usually top 10 guys, those are guys who can go get you buckets. They're going to be a number 1. Donovan Clingan, he's not going to be that guy.
No.
He wasn't even that guy on UConn. But, you know, him to the Spurs, you know, he's already going to be – he's well-coached. Yeah. He's well-coached. And he's going into the Spurs with Popovich. You have Wembanyama. I mean, those are 2 7-footers, great defenders. And again, I think it has a lot to do with him going to UConn. I mean, you just have to love. He's going to be more mature, play 2 years under Dan Hurley. And I honestly love that pick inside the top 10.
There's rumors of him going number 1 to Atlanta. Apparently Atlanta loves him. Absolutely loves
him. Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing. If you're not looking for
– Here's my thing, though.
If you don't think any of these guys will truly be a number 1 when you're looking for it, then yeah, go ahead and get Clingan. But that's the thing, is maybe the Hawks, you have Trae Young, DeJounte Murray. He's still kind of trying to prove if he's the number 2. That's probably debatable right now. He has been an all-star before. I know you already went on your spiel about him. You know, I think he's an underrated player. DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Hunter is still pretty young. So, and they just made the Eastern Conference Finals. So maybe they need a tough guy like Klingon. Another pick that I love is outside the top 10 is huge fan of Cody Williams from Colorado. Lengthy guy, can shoot. And to be honest with you, I bet his number went down in the draft because he was injured throughout. Yeah. And it was, I want to say it was pretty extensive. So,
and for you,
what's that?
And for you, he's a Pac-12 guy.
And he's a Pac-12 guy, so yeah. I got to see him play a good bit. But, you know, he's a lengthy guy. He can defend and he can score a little bit. So, 6'7", shooting guard. Now, he's got to get some weight on him. He is 178.
Well, not to mention
he's also 18, 19 years old.
That, and he's Jalen Williams' brother. And I don't know if you saw the difference between Jalen Williams' his rookie year versus his sophomore year. But Jalen Williams got in the gym and worked out a shit ton. He looked jacked his sophomore year compared to his rookie year. If Cody Williams gets half of that routine that his brother got, I think he'll be just fine as far as length. And, you know, we see guys like Brandon Miller was like that last year, where he's like just a long, lengthy guy. Obviously, Brandon Miller is a much more talented player than Cody Williams, but same body type, same build. You see more of those Kevin Durant-esque 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys that are just long, lanky, and can shoot. It's become more of the norm now, which is fine. But you're right. I mean, he's got to put on. It doesn't even have to be weight. I think people get it mixed up. You don't have to be jacked to be able to. You don't have to go from Joel Embiid, his rookie year when he came in at like a buck 90, to 270 Joel Embiid, what he is now, or whatever he is. Same thing with Giannis. Like, you don't have to do that transformation. You just have to have NBA strength. And that doesn't always have to show up in your arms. KD doesn't get pushed around as much as some people might like to believe. He can also shoot the shot.
Well, you're not weak when you score 30 points a game. You know,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, everybody likes to make the jokes. He's not weak. He is skinny. But yeah, I don't care what anybody says. You're not weak.
And he might get pushed off his spot at times, but most of the time it doesn't matter because that's where he wants to go anyway. I just think there's a difference between being built, because there's jacked guys that an NBA player that looks like Cody Williams would push him around. Like, it's different strength than what it looks like on camera. But I like him as a prospect. I don't know if the shooting will translate as much as it did in college. He didn't shoot well in high school. He had a good year. I think he shot around 37% from the three. If that transfers over to the NBA, that's perfect. If not, then he might struggle being able to score. I don't mind him, though. He's at least a defender, a long, lengthy wing defender that you could have on your team. Another guy who I don't know if you know much about him. You know, there's three guys. There's two guys that I really love down the board. We'll get to them. But two guys that I'm not so sold on. You've got Montez Buzelis, who was the number one player last year in the rankings out of high school. He went to the G League. He's kind of skinny. He is not the best scorer, not the best. He seems well-rounded, but not, you know, he didn't excel at one thing. I will say I watched him on JJ Redick's podcast, and he seems to have the right mindset as far as like an NBA player. But he's one of those guys that is a question mark for me. Ron Holland, who also went to the G League, used to be, I feel like I'm saying this for everybody. They all used to be number one players in high school. Ron Holland was that dude. He should have gone. There was rumors he was going to go to Texas out of college. He may have even committed to Texas, decommits, or just doesn't go and goes to the G League. But he's another long defender. That seems to be the prototype in today's game. I mean, Stephon Castle is 6'6". Another guy from UConn who's a point guard. He's interesting because his camp has basically come out and said, if if Stephon's not going to be the franchise point guard going forward, we don't want to be on your team. But if you look at those top teams, there's only one spot that doesn't have a franchise point guard, and that's the San Antonio Spurs. And maybe that's just their way of saying we want to go to San Antonio without physically saying that. But, I mean, Atlanta, they've got theirs. I don't think Washington's going to give up on Jordan Poole yet, so I don't think they're going to go point guard. I could be wrong because it's Washington. Charlotte's got LaMelo. It's weird with that camp, but he's a defender.
Yeah, that's been a lot, you know, hard to not love Stephon Castle, hard to not love any of those Huskies. You know, I'm even biased too because we had our bracket challenge the first year that they won it, and I still am riding high off of that, and I even picked them this year. So you best believe that, you know, I'm not a UConn fan, but once the season starts, I'm gonna find some Husky gear and I'm gonna put it on for game one when they play Stetson or something.
Well, the best part is they were winning games by 20 plus points each night, even in the tournament, which doesn't happen. Like, you have a chance if you're Dan Hurley, which is why he didn't take the Los Angeles Lakers job, which is why he didn't even, you know, look at the Detroit Pistons job. You never heard a rumor about it because it was never even a thought. He didn't take the Kentucky job because you have a chance to three-peat. Nobody's ever done that since the UCLA days of John Wooden, which some people don't even count that. So you're talking about like the 60s, where the last time Florida had a chance to do it in 2008, 2007, 2008, they won it. 2009, I guess, is the year they had a chance. They didn't – I think they lost the first round of the tournament, maybe the second. And then Billy Donovan left to go coach the Thunder. So, like, this could be Dan Hurley's last year if things don't work out, just based off of history. But a chance to three-peat, you cannot give that up for the – I don't care what money is thrown at you.
No. He had to have factored in – obviously, being the head coach of the Lakers, their top two franchise ever in NBA basketball, but just the spot that they're in, it just has not been smooth. They've had so many coaching changes, and I know we were talking about the draft, and I know we got back on the Lakers, but I do want to say this: the JJ Redick thing. I love JJ Redick. I think everybody does. I love the podcast that he had with LeBron. I think what you need with that team in LA is it just seems watching games, they are not disciplined enough. They are just not bought into the system enough. And you need somebody to lay down the law with LeBron James and actually be a coach. You cannot have the team run by the players. And it seems like when Darvin Ham was there, that it was the player's way, and you just can't have that. And JJ,
I've shown more of my hands today.
That's my biggest worry. Is I love JJ Redick. I've always listened to his podcast. I want it to work out, but I'm really worried that he's. I feel like he's buddy buddy with all those guys.
2 years,
and it just doesn't. You that relationship. You can have a good relationship between your coach and the player. Have never been a fan of the coach being best friends with the player.
That's the difference. And best friends might be a stretch. I mean, they just started the podcast. They didn't really talk before, but they are definitely friends now. They definitely are what I think. And people always want to put, you know, JJ Redick on blast and like, oh, this was a work or a tryout video. All this was you're trying out to be LeBron's kid. It's like, no, he had a chance to go do a podcast with LeBron James. We would all do it. I mean, it's not like.
Yeah, but the podcast started before the playoffs.
Well before.
So.
Which means it was been the worst for 6 months, probably.
Yeah, the Lakers, they, and JJ is so good. The old man of the three is awesome. And he's had some great interviews. I mean, it is awesome. So they had that forever. Unfortunately, he said today in his press conference he wasn't going to do the podcast anymore, which I get it. Like, you can't just have you can't have the coach of the Lakers talking about what he saw in the Bulls Hornets game on Thursday night.
Probably because he's not watching the Bulls Hornets game anymore. He probably has to watch film on his guys and his guys only. I say that every team he's watching film on, but you know what I mean. Yeah. I think the difference is he's an X's and O's guy. We know that, but at some point you have to be able to command a locker room, but also like you've got to have guys that respect you, but also you know. Our friend, you can be friendly. Ty Lue and LeBron were close. They were close. But when Ty Lue got in LeBron's ass, LeBron didn't say it wasn't like a Darvin Ham where if Darvin Ham ever said anything to LeBron, you could see LeBron on the court be like, I'm not listening. Like,
yeah, the respect. It seemed like the respect was a little off.
No, it was never there. And part of that is Darvin Ham wasn't the greatest coach. And part of it is that's how LeBron's been. If you don't remember, that's why he left Miami. He didn't like Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra being able to run the show and tell him what to do all the time. Obviously, he went back home. That's, you know, the storyline. But part of that reason was Eric Spoelstra treated them like a player and not, you know, the coach or the GM or, you know, whatever it is. So I agree. He's got to get command of LeBron.
I tell you what. And the Lakers would never do this. And it's the same for any franchise like that. The Yankees, they don't rebuild because they are the Yankees. The Lakers, they don't rebuild. The Dallas Cowboys, they don't rebuild. It's just they're one of those franchises, high market, too many fans. And really, there's no excuse because – and it's a little different in baseball because of the money thing. And there's not a cap. You know, you can spend – if you're willing to pay the fines – and obviously the Yankees are, then you can spend any money as you want. But, it would be interesting if the Lakers decided to rebuild. And you know, we talked about Chicago being stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
I mean, what the Lakers, ever since that championship team, what have they done? I want to say 2021.
I'm sure they missed the playoffs.
2021, they lost first round to the Phoenix Suns. Okay, they lost first round. 2020,
one of those years they missed the playoffs.
One of those years they didn't even make the playoffs. Last year, obviously they made the Western Conference Finals. They did, but
they got swept.
They were outmatched, and that was honestly might have been their last window because of how good the teams are now. Because now it's not just Denver.
Well, we can get into it because we'll go back to the draft in just a second, and we won't spend too much more time on this episode. But if you think about the West, okay, so you've got the same teams that you had last year. You can throw in OKC is pretty much a guarantee unless, God forbid, something happens to two out of the three stars to be in the playoffs. You can guarantee Denver is going to be back. You can guarantee Minnesota. Unless Anthony Edwards gets hurt, is going to be back. You can guarantee that the Dallas Mavericks – I shouldn't say guarantee. You can confidently say that Dallas Mavericks will be back after, you know, coming off a championship run. Then you start getting into, okay, well, the Houston Rockets finished basically 500 last year and looked better the second half of the year than they have in the last – since James Harden was there.
Still not bought into Houston.
You might be after
still not bought in,
especially in the regular season. I'm not saying playoffs, but
I know Sagoon is a good player, but I'm good. Not sold. I think
Jalen Green
going blank. I'm sorry, Jalen Green. I'm sorry, Jalen Green is too inefficient right now. I think he's too inefficient, and I think they play too much selfish ball right now, which I think Sagoon is. Perfect for them.
But they barely missed the playoffs this year, and they're not going to have a full season of Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Sengun, Jabari Smith, Cam Whitmore.
Yeah, I think playoffs, they'll be there.
But then you also got the Memphis Grizzlies who are going to come back because Ja was hurt all of last year. They still have Ja, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson, and a pretty decent pick this year. And then you've got, you know – I'm missing. You still got the Lakers that are going to be competing.
Kings.
Who knows if the Warriors will be any good. I mean, the West is just – I feel like we're missing – Phoenix Suns could be back in the playoffs if they run it back.
No, I mean, no, you hit all of them. I mean, most of them at least. So, and that's why, you know, we were talking about Atlanta, you know, Eastern Conference. If that Alex Saar, if they draft him and he turns out to be, you know, pretty solid, who knows? Atlanta might get hot and get into the playoffs and make a little bit of a run.
Well, that's the thing. The East is so top heavy. I mean, you look at – you've got the Celtics, obviously. You got the Bucks. You've got the Sixers. You've got I'm missing a team, a big one. Either way, the Magic could be good this year. Again, Cleveland's always going to be there if Donovan Mitchell's there. But it's really those top three teams. And the top three teams, are you really scared of the 76ers in the playoffs? Because they haven't shown me a reason to be scared of them. So now you're looking at Milwaukee and the Boston Celtics, the two respectable teams in the East. That
I also think you have to throw in the Knicks.
I knew I was forgetting one.
Yeah, I think the Knicks, you know, Knicks? It's weird. They feel like they're one piece maybe away. But Julius Randle was out, OG was great in the playoffs.
I hate to listen, you know, I'm a Kentucky fan. I think Julius Randle being out is the reason they did so well at the end of the season.
That's
the playoffs. Because here's the thing. He's a ball stopper. And maybe it's the preference in me, because I can't stand watching people that just not hog the ball, but just everything stops around them when they get the ball. There's no movement. Just watch me play one-on-one. And if it goes in, then great. If not, then we'll live to see another day.
Well, yeah, he's not efficient enough to be doing that. Yeah.
No. And really not a lot of players are. Because even you saw it can only take you so far. It took James Harden so far. It's Luka's now gotten to a championship, but it wasn't even close when he got to the finals. That style of play just doesn't work. And if you've got it with Julius Randle doing it, I'm surprised Tibbs hasn't killed him yet. But if you have Jalen Brunson, OG, and OG's a free agent, and who knows if the Knicks are able to retain him. They did trade for him, so you would hope that they would throw at least a sizable contract at him. But they could be special. That actually leads me perfectly into the draft again. We'll just touch on two more players, maybe three.
I got one I want to talk to you about.
Is it Connect?
What's that?
Is it Connect?
No, it is not.
Who is it?
It's Flipowski.
Okay.
Reason why is I feel like for him, kind of a disappointment to fall to 16 in a draft that doesn't feel like it's got the best of the best, but could be a sleeper pick, him going to 16 because of the potential. Like I said, when he was coming into Duke, you would have thought he was going to be one and done, top five, top 10 pick in the draft. And to fall to 16 in this class is
– after being a sophomore.
It kind of shows he was good at Duke. There's no doubt about it. But the way that he was hyped up, you would have thought this man was going to be the next Jahlil Okafor. Now, Jahlil Okafor hasn't worked out in the NBA, but he was outstanding in college. Because honestly, he's getting as much hype as that Cooper Flagg coming into Duke, and Cooper Flagg's supposed to be a top five pick when he goes to the league. So, but with that being said, you know, going to 16, he's still 6'11", can shoot. Might be a little bit of a sleeper pick if the Sixers take him.
He definitely could be. And for anybody that it doesn't. They probably don't understand kind of going behind the third wall here. Basically, I drew up the top prospects according to CBS. I just took it off their site in order, and then I put them in the draft order. So it's not like I'm mocking.
Yeah,
this is the Matt Ryan mock draft. Okay, guys, we plugged and played the draft order, because nobody knows what's going to happen. Anybody that tries to act like it's always fun. I love doing mock drafts. It's actually one of my favorite pastimes, which makes me sound like a nerd. But if you try to guess what's going to happen, you never know. There's so many trades. There's so many stupid picks that happen that you're like, what the hell? Like, I would have never thought about doing that. He's definitely a good one. The one that I wanted to talk about, and you were talking about the Knicks, and obviously this isn't the one piece that is going to take them over the top like you were talking about, but it is a piece that just fits their style. Devin Carter, I believe he's out of West Virginia. No, sorry, Providence.
Javon.
Yeah, Javon Carter. Devin Carter is a Knick. Whether he goes to the Knicks or not, he is a Knick. He is a point guard who can handle the ball. He can shoot, but he defends and he does all the dirty work. And he's a Tibbs guy. He'd play 50 minutes if you need him to. He is just a New York Knick made over. Like I said, whether he plays in New York or not, that's the player you're going to get. But that's the one guy that I thought, oh, that'd be a perfect fit that Tibbs would put all of his eggs in that basket, to get behind. So he's a guy I really like. Another guy I like is, he's a Duke player, which I don't say that very often. I do love a lot of the Duke players, even though I hate Duke. Jared McCain, I think if the Lakers,
Jared McCain's good.
If the Lakers can pick up Jared McCain at 17, I think you have a chance to be able to play him right away. I'm not saying starting. I'm just saying you have a bit. Jalen Huchefino was never going to be a guy who played in rotational minutes. I think Jared McCain could be, simply because of his shooting. I mean, the guy can shoot the lights out of the ball. In high school, he was a killer for his team. In college, he kind of got a lot of flack because he did a lot of TikTok videos. But when he was on the court, he was really good. And for a guy like LeBron, when they just need shooting. And who knows if the D'Lo situation will – how that's going to turn out if he resigns. If this is all assuming LeBron resigns, because he is technically got a player option. But nobody knows what's going to happen in that point guard room. If you have to go old or if you have to sign somebody that you may not want to start, if Jared McCain plays well early, you know, you could sneak him in that starting role, at least in my eyes, eventually down the season. Obviously, a lot of these picks are about fit. So I could say that now about him to the Lakers. If he goes to the Bulls, who knows how his career is going to turn out, because it's the Bulls. Yeah. So some guys just go to die on teams like – I remember one of our good buddies was the biggest Denny Avdija fan, and I thought Denny was decent. But he went to the Wizards, and it's like, well, what are you going to do? Because that's how I feel about Alexander Sarr. If he goes to the Wizards, it's like, well, shit, it's out of my hands. And it's out of yours, too. It's out of Alexander Sarr's.
Can't do anything,
No, you can't blame the guy for having a shit career because he got drafted to a shit team and can't draft anybody, but I digress. All right, last two. Ryan Dunn out of Virginia, elite defender. Elite defender. Like, one of the best defenders in any draft that I've looked at in the last 10 years. Cannot do anything offensively. He is a Virginia
player. Well, he would be solid for that Pelicans team. They have the scores.
If you think CJ is a scorer, I'm going to kill you. CJ better be off. He better be cut.
The Trailblazers, Dame and CJ, those were one of the most frustrating teams ever, because they when they were on a heater, they could not miss. But it was a big if. It was a big if. And I love Damian Lillard is one of the clutchest players ever, but it's good that he's on the Bucks now. He cannot be a number one, because Damian Lillard has not proven that he can be a number one in the playoffs, because the Trailblazers, they had some talent around him. Best he ever did was the Western Conference Finals, and they got swept by Golden State. Yeah. So, but CJ had some games where he can go off. I think CJ is the number three is good. CJ is the number three score is good. If Zion,
higher than me.
if Zion is doing his thing and Brandon Ingram is doing his thing, I think if you're asking for 15 to 20 points for CJ McCollum, I feel like that should be very easy.
In the regular season, yes.
Now,
when the playoffs came around, he was – obviously, Zion got hurt towards the end there. They, for some reason, didn't trust Brandon Ingram playing basketball anymore. I don't know what that was, and that falling out may lead to him getting traded. But you have more faith in CJ McCollum than I do. But I think the difference is Ryan Dunn is a how good he is defensively is how bad he is offensively. Like, he is a perfect Virginia player because he will play, you'll be able to score 7 points shooting 2 for 14 on him, but he'll also score 7 points but he'll shoot a lot worse because he'll get every offensive rebound because he's a long athlete who plays defense, who hustles. But he's just, I don't know, he's one of those guys that if you can get any offensive production out of him in the future, he could be a absolute steal that comes off the bench and is just one of those defenders that just irritates the hell out of star players. And the last one is Tristan Da Silva, Colorado guy. Absolutely love him. I don't know how much you watch him. I know you watched Cody Williams a decent amount when he played at Colorado. Tristan Da Silva is just a guy that another one of those guys, if you're a championship team, put him on your roster. He is a winner. He's just one of those. It's hard to explain, but it's like, you know, when Denver drafted Christian Brown and he came from Kansas, which is a different situation because they won the championship that year, but he came in, he just did all the right things. That's what Tristan Da Silva could be for a championship contending team.
Him going 24 would be a steal.
For sure. I think he has a chance to go to the lottery.
He can score the ball. Like he is all around, and you know, he's 6'8". He's a great size. I love that you brought up Tristan Da Silva and Phoenix. That could be a perfect pick for them.
You know who I think Phoenix should pick?
Who is that?
Tyler Kolek.
Really?
They don't have a point guard. They Devin Booker was their point guard for all of last year because of Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant basically played the four all last year. Bradley Beal is always hurt, and I like Devin Booker as my two better than I like him as my one. If you get a true point guard out there, even if it's just off the bench and give Devin Booker some time to play the two again.
That's the thing with Phoenix is they might need a point guard, but you know, they're in win now mode. So are they going to trust a point guard to be out there and kind of as rookie season?
But at least having a guy that Devin Booker can now be pushed to the two and you can trust the ball in his hands. I don't think they had that at Phoenix last year, even off the bench. So I think him being a playmaker for them, and you've got plenty of people to throw the ball to, so he'd be good. But yeah, the last one I want to get your thoughts on, and we'll wrap it up. Kellen Ware.
I thought you were going to say another guy. Kellen Ware, there's obviously a ton of potential with Kellen Ware. You know, he's just a sophomore. He's 7 foot, and he can shoot. I think
athletic.
Athletic. He just – the times watching him, it seems like he just need to get tougher and go inside the paint more because he fell in love with the three ball, and I get it. You know, we're really in the age of I feel like 2010s was all about the three-point shot, getting that implemented, and that's into the game now. It feels like the 20s are all about these lengthy centers at 7 foot who can shoot, but I think the best ones that we've seen at that length, they don't settle. Chet Holmgren doesn't settle behind the 3-point line. He takes it to the rack. Victor Wembanyama is tough in the paint. That's been the problem with Bol Bol. He settles way too much behind the 3-point line, And that's something I've seen with Khalil Ware, is he settles way too much. It is great that you're 7 foot and you can shoot the three, but do not make that your identity, because at the end of the day, you're 7 foot and 230 pounds.
Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah, and that, and you know,
what a bum.
Well, he shot, he did shoot.
What a bum.
Just not efficiently enough. Just not efficiently enough.
This is how it's, this is how you know we're past an hour, because I'm getting in my hating state. I don't know, I'm not even a hater. I'm a Kentucky fan who loves Karl-Anthony Towns. But Karl-Anthony Towns, man, he's so hard to root for nowadays. He shot
a lot of threes, and there were some games, especially watching that Denver series, where he almost lost the game for him because of how inefficient he was from downtown. The one that I thought you were going to bring up was Isaiah Collier, and it's funny that he, on this CBS mock draft, they got him going to the Sacramento Kings. I can already picture him in a Kings uniform, because he is just – he is a copy of – and I'm going blank again on a player's name, Baylor. Baylor, he's with Davion Kings Mitchell? Now. Yes, Mitchell. Those guys I see as very similar, kind of the same size, same build. You know, Isaiah Collier, he was a good player. The times – never remember seeing him go off. I don't see him as, like, being a – just a not even – maybe not even a third option, to be honest with you, on a team. But I do see him as a Mitchell, you know, a guy who can give you some buckets, but he's going to be really athletic and play some pretty good defense.
Here's my thing. After his wrist injury, he played extremely well. Comparing to what he played in the beginning of the season. And you got to remember, he also was a top – he was the top point guard prospect in this class. He was supposed to be the guy for USC. You know, the injury in the beginning didn't help. But after that wrist injury, he played very well. I think if he falls to the mid-20s, I think it'll be a absolute steal, because he has the potential.
If he fell to the mid-20s, that would be ridiculous.
But there's some – I mean, it's hard to tell now, but even if he falls out of the lottery, I'm like, it's still one of those chances of, like, yeah, he didn't produce very well in college, but you have a chance to draft one of those guys that has the potential to be a star. And I don't think you get that opportunity outside of the lottery very often. So one of these teams
I tell you who I would take him over, though, is Flipowski. I would take him over Isaiah Collier.
For sure. Oh, I thought you went the other way around.
No. I would take Flipowski over Isaiah Collier. I think Kyle Flipowski has a better chance of turning out to be a better NBA player, or just a top scorer than Isaiah Collier. And it's hard to really, it's on me. I shouldn't be comparing those guys, because they're different positions, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, but I guess if you're picking, you know, and you're trying to, those guys you're not building your team around. But if you're just needing somebody, a last piece, you know, I think Flipowski going to 16 really could be a steal. I really think it could be.
Well, good for you. I'm glad you like him so much, because we've all got that.
I know there's a lot of people who don't. I know there's a lot of people who are not fans of Flipowski. Well, just the Duke factor.
Here's the thing: is I'm always jealous of Duke guys, because, believe it or not, we were always in the running for those guys, and we never got them. Zion, we never got. You know, Cooper Flagg, we didn't get. It's just, you kind of, I want to see those players do well. A guy that I loved was Marvin Bagley. I wanted to see him do so well. And obviously he flopped in the NBA and hasn't really found his way back. But, you know, I root for those guys, but it's just the school that I hate. So it's
different. Well, I mean, Duke has definitely not had the NBA success as Kentucky, but, you know, they still have some great, like, you know, Paulo. He's going to be a number one. Jason Tatum, NBA champion. Spurs, Tyus Jones. Yeah, Kyrie Irving. Tyus Jones, it seems like, you know, he got a lot of minutes for San Antonio. Nice little point guard. So, I think Lipowski, just because of the 2 years at Duke, that probably, or maybe that scares scouts that this guy was supposed to go into the draft as a high pick after his first year, and he went another year at Duke. Because, you know, I have a hard time believing if he was going to go top 10 in the draft last year, I have a hard time believing that he would go back to Duke.
Yeah. Well,
unless they just loved it a ton.
Well, I think the draft was deeper back then. So I don't think last year he was projected there, but it reminds me of when players do that. I remember when Marcus Smart did it. Marcus Smart was supposed to, his freshman year, he could have come out of Oklahoma State and been a top three pick immediately. He went back for a sophomore year. I don't know if he tried to go win a championship with Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
But I think it was him and like Markell Brown, who you probably don't remember.
The dream team.
He came back and he went at six instead of the top two or three that he was supposed to go. So it's like most of the time, the draft, going back to college just shows your flaws more than anything. Like some guys improve. Some guys are like PJ Washington, who was a top prospect ish and didn't really play well his freshman year, but was still projected just based off, you know, his size and stuff. And he came back and he was a better player and he ended up going to the lottery because of it. But that rarely ever happens. You have to grind in the offseason to make that worthwhile. And some of these players just don't do that. But all right. Well, now that we've gone a little over, we'll end it there. We will definitely do a free agent frenzy, I guess, episode, whether it's before, during, after, whatever it is, because the NBA offseason is always the best time of the year because so much we could see a blockbuster trade that we have no idea that's coming. So that'll be fun to look forward to. Free agency is going to be more who fits what team. We're going to be basing it off of contracts. Obviously, people that are re-signing, like we're not going to say that LeBron's a free agent, even though technically he is. It will be more realistic. But some of these guys could be moving around and it could shake up the league a little bit and be interesting. But we'll definitely do that sometime this week or next week. But until then, Matthew, you got anything? You want to plug anything? You got anything to plug?
No, ma'am. Yeah, it'll be great after the draft. A lot of things are going to change. LeBron, no coincidence that he still hasn't picked up his option, or I guess that's what he's deciding if he wants to right now. He probably just wants to see how the draft goes. But no, it'll be great. Can't wait to get into these talks because we'll have more look at it next Monday. But yeah, the NBA offseason is always great. It always has the most drama. So it'll be awesome. It'll be a lot of fun next Monday.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see you all then. Until then, good night and go Hot Rods.
Peace.